Okay, we're beginning here about the two dots on the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the issue of Mitasek, which we dealt with the machloka between Abai and Rava with regards to the din of Mitasek. Over here we have continued machloka between them, and the Gemara will discuss why we need these additional examples, which is Itmar Mitkavin Lizrok Shtayim, person intended to throw two Amot, which is not a violation of Shabbat, Vizarak Arba, and in the end he threw four Amot, which is a violation of Shabbat. Rava Amar Patur, Abai Amar Chayav. Rava says he's Patur in this case. Abai says he is Chayav. This seems to be a case of Mitasek, because he was Mitasek with something that was Mutar, or was not problematic midoraita, and then resulted in a problem deoraita. And that's what Rava explains. Rava Amar Patur, Delo Mikavin Lizrika Da'arbo. He never intended to throw it for a mot, and as Rashi notes over here, Batzer Mehani Lo Shem Zrika Allah. Less than for a mot is not called Zrika. This is a formulation that we've discussed in other times and will be important in the upcoming Gemarot, which deal with the Shi'urim for the Melachot, which is sometimes the Shi'ur of a Melacha just tells you how much you need to do. If you did less than that, then it'd still be a violation of what's called Chatzir Shi'ur Asur Min HaTorah, and that Chatzir Shi'ur is a partial violation of whatever it is that you are restricted from doing. On the other hand, there's sometimes that there is a concept called Chatzir Melacha, whereby not reaching the threshold Shi'ur does not mean that you're doing something partially wrong, but rather that you're not doing anything wrong at all, because the nature of the malacha has this minimum shiur built into it. Absent that shiur is not considered a malacha. We're going to see a number of times today's daf that Rashi makes that point, and over here he does it again, which is, Batzer Mehani Lo Shem Zrika Allah. Less than four amot is not called zrika. It doesn't even have a shem zrika to it, and therefore it's not even a malacha. And that's what Rava's pointing out, which is that he didn't even engaged in something that was asur, because that's not the malacha until it reaches for amot. On the other hand, Abaye says he's chayav, demikabin lezrika ba'amot. He intended to throw something, and he ended up throwing it. So his intent was carried out, and since his intent was carried out, even though he didn't meet the threshold that he thought he was going to throw it, he did actually further. Nevertheless, his action was an action that he intended for, and therefore he is chayav. And as we discussed before, for mitasek, for Rova, in order to be chayav in something, you need both the activity that you're engaging in, as well as the intent for that activity to be carried out in order for you to be chayav. Vayi, on the other hand, only has one requirement, that you intended to engage in that activity. Whether the engagement was something that was mutar, and it ended up being asur, that's not an issue, and therefore you're going to be chayav. Now the Gemara brings another example, kesavur, reshut yachid v'nimtzeit reshut rabim. He thought he was throwing four amot in Rishut Yachid, and instead it turned out to be that he was in Rishut Rabim. Rava Amar Patur, once again Rava says Patur, Abai Amar Chayav. Rava Amar Patur, Dehalo Mikavin Lezrika Deisura. He never intended for a Zrika that was a Zrika of Isur. Whereas Abai Amar Chayav, you are Chayav, Dehalo Mikavin Lezrika Ba'alma. Once again, your intent was to throw the object, and you did carry out that intent to throw the object. Turns out that you were in the wrong place when you did it. That's not enough of a reason to be called mitasek or to be patur according to Abaye. Whereas for Rava, you need both the action to be the intended action, as well as the result, or that which you were intending to carry out, to be the same, and therefore there's a failure here, and that's why you are patur. Vitzricha. And now the Gemara does it tzrichuta. We brought two examples here, as well as the example that we had in yesterday's daf, which was that he was nitkaven lachtoch et talush. He intended to cut something that was detached. V'chatach et mechubar. And then he cut something that was attached. There we saw again Rava Patur and Abaye Amar Chayav. We saw yesterday there's a machloka between Rashi and Tosafot as to how to read that line in the Gemara. Rashi seemingly, and based on the Gemara and Kritut, it's clear that that's what Rashi says over there, which is when he says lachtoch et talush v'chatach et mechubar, means he intended to cut something that was detached, and ended up cutting something that was mechubar, a totally different object. It was not the same object that he intended for. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot bring from the Rabbeinu Tam, who disagrees with Rashi and says that when it says lachtoch et talush v'chatach et mechubar, the object that he was cutting was the same object. He just thought it was detached. Turned out it was attached. So over here, the object did not change. So the Tosafot HaRosh back there notes about our Gemara over here, at first, that it seems like it's much more similar to what Rashi says. So over here it says, Nitkaven Lizrok Shtayim, Vizarak Arba. So here, the case is a case where he intended to throw two amot, and then threw four amot, and here it's the same object. if it is the same object, then you can understand why that's differentiated from the case before of lachtoch et talush v'chatach et amechubar. So that's why the Gemara brings a different example over here, because it's a different case. In the case yesterday, they were different objects. In the case today, it's the same object, and the Gemara is about to do its richuta. But then he says, well, then how do you explain it according to the Rabbeinu Tam? And he suggests over here that maybe you would have thought that the difference between Rishut Yachid and Rishut Rabim, or from 2 amot to 4 amot, is not a significant enough distinction in order to say that he didn't have intent for it, and therefore he should be patur. That's why the Gemara brings these examples, because in these examples, what's the difference if he throws in Rishut Yachid or he throws in Rishut Rabim? He's still throwing 4 amot. So it turns out that he got the location wrong. Maybe that's not a significant enough reason to say you're patur mitasek according to Rava. Gemara comes to say that that's why it is. So then he reverses his position and says, now I understand, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, why the Gemara changed the sample or the example that they used, which is that before they were using Talush and Mechubar, and over here they started to use Shtei Amot, Arba Amot, and Rishut Yachid and Rishut Rabim, because that's the significance of the point, which is that these are items that you might have thought otherwise that are Chayav, even according to Rova. But according to Rashi, why did the Gemara change the example? The Gemara wanted to switch from a multiple objects to a single object, then it could have used the exact same scenario as before. As opposed to saying Lachtoch et Talush and Mechatach Mechubar Acher, then over here all you had to say was it was a case that he was intending Lachtoch et Talush, Mechatach Oto Mechubar, and he ended up cutting the exact same thing that was Mechubar. And according to Rashi, that would have been sufficient distinction between the case before and the case over here. And therefore he says, maybe even the Rabbeinu Tam makes more sense now, because according to Rashi, the Gemara should not have switched the example that it was using, because they could have gotten to the case for Rashi in the same manner, which is Talush and Mechubar. Because according to Rabbeinu Tam, you have to switch cases, because Talush and Mechubar was already a case when you were dealing with one object. In order to have a bigger Chiddush over here, you have to switch to Hotza'ah or Zrikah, whereby you would have thought that the action, in a sense, was carried out. Why does it matter 2 or 4 amot? Why does it matter Rishut Yachid, Rishut Rabim? And that way, he also brings support to this position of the Rabbeinu Tam against Rashi. And similarly to the way that the Tosafot again said in yesterday's daf, at the end of the Gemara yesterday, which spoke about Shuman and Rok and Shuman and Chelev, that over there, that's much more similar to what the Rabbeinu Tam is saying, where you make a mistake in the same object, not a mistake in a different object. And for that reason, many Rishonim favor heavily the reading of the Rabbeinu Tam and the Balei Tosafot over Rashi's interpretation here. The one thing that's very interesting about the Tosafot Rosh is that he believes that Rashi, in the end, agrees with the Rabbeinu Tam's position, because he claims that the case of Nitkaven Lizrok Shtayim Vizrak Arba O Nitkaven Lizrok B'Shut Rachid and Vizorek B'Shut Rabim is speaking about the same object. And so then fundamentally, in the end, Rashi would agree with that idea that even if it's the same object, you can be Mitasek. Problem with that is that Rashi and Kretot on Daf Yutet Amud Bet does not sound like that at all, because there in Kretot, Rashi writes that if it's Chelev and you thought it was Shuman and ate it, that's a case of Shogeg and not a case of Mitasek, and that leaves Rashi's position very difficult in our Gemara over here, and that's why, again, many favor the Rabbeinu Tam's view. Now the Gemara says, Tzricha, we need all three of these cases, because each one of them brings a chiddush to us, and that is, if we had the case of over there, Rova believes that that's the case. Over there, his original intent to cut was to cut something that was mutar, talush. If a person intends to throw 2 amot and ends up throwing 4 amot, da arba below tarte lo mizrikale. You can't get to 4 without passing through 2. 2 is subsumed within 4. And therefore, your intent to throw 2 is subsumed in your actually throwing 4. There is some question within the Rishonim as to whether when you threw over here the 4, is it that you threw 2 and then it rolled out to 4? That's a view in the Meiri. Or is it that you threw 4 instead of throwing 2? This Lashon of the Gemara favors the Meiri slightly, which is that the 4 has within it subsumed 2, and that's because you threw 2, in the end, it just rolled past that point and went out to 4. So there we would have thought, ema modi leila abaye, that he would agree with abaye that you should be chayav, and that's why we have the case of shtayim that turned out to be 4. V'yashmin and baha, if you told me the case of Rishut Rabim, where he threw two, and it turned out to be four. But how come Arova, the Halok, Mikabin, the Zvika, the Arba? Because over there, he didn't intend to throw four amot, which would have been an Isur. As we noted before, Rashi says less than four amot is not called Zrika at all. It's not a Chatzi Shiur, it's not Zrika at all. Aval, Kasovo, or Rishut Yachid, Vinimsa Rishut Rabim. The case where he thought it was Rishut Yachid and threw four amot, and then he finds out it's Rishut Rabim, Demikabin, the Zrika, the Arba. Here he threw four amot. So he accomplished the din of Zrika, it just happens to be in the wrong location where he thought it would have been okay. It turns out it wasn't okay. Then you would agree with the Bayit Zrika. And that's why we need all three cases over here. And vice versa, if we had started with the case of throwing four in Rishut Yachid and turned out to be Rishut Rabim, there Abaye might have said Chayav. And then if you told me the other cases, maybe Abaye would have agreed to Rova. And so in each of those cases, it teaches us that Abaye still says Patur. That's why we need all three cases to teach us the extent of both Abaye and Rova's position with regards to Mitasek. Now the Gemara challenges this from something we've seen a number of times, and we'll see again the main source at the beginning of the second Amud today, which is Tanan. Avot melachot, 40 chaser achat. The melachot are 40 minus 1, 39 melachot on Shabbat. Babinam ba'minyon alomali. What's the reason that you have to give me a count in the Mishnah? You could have just counted the melachot that the Mishnah enumerates. Why do you have to actually give me that count? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan she'asan kulam be'alam achad, chayav kol achad bechad. If you do them in one forgetting, you're chayav a chatat on each one of them, meaning that this is the maximum number of chatot that one could be chayav for in the violation of melachot on Shabbat is 39, because there are only 39 categories, and as we'll see, those 39 categories limit your capacity for violating Shabbat b'shogeg to those 39 melachot. Anything else is subsumed under those categories, and therefore you'd only bring 39 chatot. So bishlam alam baye, I can understand Abaye's position, namarki agavno, chayav. In the case of mitasek like this, you are chayav. Mishkachad la diyoda di isura de Shabbat. He knew about isur of Shabbat. Diyoda la isur malachot. And he also knows that malachot are asurot. The katab is shiurim. He just makes a mistake in understanding shiur is that is restricted. So we have a problem here because there's a case or a concept called zadon Shabbat and shigigat melachot. Case in the Mishnah, or the first Mishnah of Klal Gadol, where a person knows that it is Shabbat, so that he knows that it's a day that you're not supposed to do anything, and shigat melachot, but he forgot that all these melachot are asurot, and therefore he's chayav achatat for each one of the melachot that he violates. That's the case of zadon Shabbat shigat melachot, you chayav 39 chataot in that case. The problem is, how did he know it was Shabbat? If he doesn't know there are any melachot that are asurot, then how or what is the possibility that he knew that it was Shabbat? He didn't know any halacha or any din that relates to Shabbat that makes it unique to Shabbat. So for Abaye, you can suggest that it's a case where he knew about Shabbat, and he knew that these melachot were asurot. And it was a case where he intended to do less than the shiur, and then he ended up doing the full shiur. And each one of the 39 melachot has a shiur. So if he intended to do less than that shiur of all the 39 melachot, and ends up doing the full shiur by accident, that's a case you're going to be chayav achatat, and that could be the scenario of zadon Shabbat and shigigat melachot. Ela the Rova, according to Rova, the Mar Patur in that case, heichem ishkach adlab zadon Shabbat shigigat melachot. What's the scenario where you do know it's Shabbat, yet you make a mistake about the melachot? What mistake did you make? If you make a mistake like any of the ones that we just noted, you'd be patur according to Rova, because that's mitasek. Where it says anicha yisavelak Rav Yochanan. That works well if he holds like Rabbi Yochanan, who we saw earlier in the Perek. Damar kevin deshagag bikareit avobi shehizid balav. If he doesn't know that the violation of Shabbat is punishable by karet, he knows that it's wrong to do this. He just didn't know that you were chayav karet for it. That's already called shogeg. So then mishkachad la diyodol de Shabbat balav, a case where he knew that these were lavin, these were restricted on Shabbat, just had no idea that you were chayav karet if you violated them. That would be the scenario in which he had Zadon Shabbat. He knows about the 39 melachot. He knows they're asurot. Just happens to be, he doesn't know that they're chayav karet. And that is enough to allow him to bring a korban shogeg for violating those melachot. At least Savalaki Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, you're not called a shogeg until Ashishkog Balav Ubi Karet, where you didn't know it was restricted and you didn't know it was chayav karet, meaning that you didn't know there was a problem on Shabbat. Then what does he know about Shabbat that That's not one of the 39 melachot that makes that it's Zadon Shabbat, but Shigigat melachot. So Gemara gives the answer that it already gave twice back on Samach Tet and Ayin, which is the Dayadolot Tchumim Valiv de Rabbi Akiva. He knows about the issue of Tchum Shabbat, which according to Rabbi Akiva is Asur Midoraita. It's not one of the 39 melachot, and therefore it's not something that you'd be chayav a chatat for. So that was what his knowledge of Shabbat was, that you're not allowed to travel a certain distance or over a certain amount. And that's how he knew it was Shabbat, but he didn't know about any of the other 39 melachot. Back on Samach Tet, the Balei HaTosafot point out that you can't rely on Isi, who we saw back at the beginning of Masechta on Dav Vav, who said that one of the 39 melachot is not chayav karet. It's true that you're not chayav karet for it, but you are chayav achatat for all of them. So that wouldn't solve your problem. But why don't you say that you know Shabbat about the Asay? And that's what the Re asks back on Samach Tet Amud Aleph. Why don't you say that he knows about the issue of Zachor et Yom HaShabbat LeKodsho or B'Yom HaShvi Tishbot, that there is an assay that creates an Isur assay? Why can't that be the knowledge that he has with regards to Shabbat?
And that might relate to a different machloket as to how integral is the assay to the Lot assay of Shabbat. The Rabbeinu Tam later on makes a point that one is Shovet Mimelacha, but just because they don't have any work to do, that's not called Shvitat Shabbat. The assay of Shabbat says that you have to actively engage in Shvitah for the purpose of resting on Shabbat. And therefore he sees the assay and Lot assay heavily correlated one to the other, whereas others see the assay being totally independent. And if a person is Shovet on Shabbat, it has nothing to do with the assay of Shabbat. And that distinction might also relate to Rashi on Daf Ayin Amud Aleph as to why B'charisha Kutsir Tishbot is not considered to be a Devarshi Yatsa Min HaKlaut, the Lamed HaKlaut Kulo Yatsa, is because you can't have that by an assay vis-a-vis a Lot assay. That would seem to indicate that there's differentiation between the assay and the Lot assay, as opposed to his second answer, which says that they're Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Ke'achad, and therefore they can't be Lamed HaKlaut Kulo Yatsa. There it seems to say that the assay and the Lot assay of the Melachot of Shabbat are integrally connected. So you see this distinction being made, and that might have influence over here as to why the Gemara doesn't think the assay is sufficient grounds to be considered Shabbat without the melachot of Shabbat, because the two are integrally connected. The Tosfot Yeshanim over there also mentions, why don't we say that he knows about it with regards to the lav de mechamer, also driving an animal on Shabbat, which is a separate isur of Shabbat that does not subsumed within the restrictions of karet or the lametet melachot. So over there, the Tosfot Yeshanim says, if he thinks he's mutar and mechol melachot, how could it be that he knows about mechamer? How could it be that he thinks he can do any melacha in the world, but he can't drive his animal, or his animal can't do something? That doesn't seem to be like a logical way that someone would approach Shabbat. Also, you can't say it's Rabbi Yossi, who we saw recently, who says that havara lelav yatzat. The reason it says, Lo Taviru Eish B'chol Moshvetechem Yom HaShabbat, is because it's an Isur Lav and not an Isur Karet. Because Havara is one of the 39 Melachot mentioned in the Mishnah. And on that Mishnah, we say that you get 39 Chataot. So it's clear that our Mishnah holds that the Havara is the Chalek Yatzat and is a restricted Melacha and not just the Lav Yatzat. And you can't say that he knows about Shabbat by one of the Toladot, one of the derivative Melachot on Shabbat. Because if he doesn't know about the Av Melacha being Asur, there's no way that he's going to know that the Toladah is Asur. That's just not, again, a logical thing that one would come to a conclusion like that. And you can't say that he knows that the punishment for Shabbat is Skila, and that's how he knows about it. He doesn't know that there's Karet or a Chatat. That doesn't work, because we saw already that when a person is a Shogeg, it has to be a case where Shav Midiato. Had he known the information, he would have acted differently. We see from here that he knows there's a punishment of skila, and he still doesn't act differently. So now if you told him it was karet, or that it was problematic, he would have acted differently. No, he already knows that there's skila, and he didn't act differently. So that wouldn't bring you into a chatat. And tells what Yishanim notes, you can't say that he made a mistake in shiurim, meaning that he thought that the itzur of havara was 5 amot instead of 4 amot, because that's an unlikely scenario. Where would he come up with all these made-up shiurim that make the difference? Our case of here, Abai is saying that he knows the real shiurim, he just intended to do less than them, and then ends up doing the full shiur, and that is a possibility, because the individual was intending not to violate Shabbat, and then was mitasek, and ended up violating Shabbat, and that, you could have a scenario where you'd be chayav chataot. And for Rova, we're going to suggest that it's Rabbi Akiva, by Tchumin, which is a different area totally, that the person would have knowledge of Shabbat about this issue, even though he might not have knowledge about all other aspects of it, he might just remember that you're not allowed to walk or not allowed to go the distance, even though he doesn't know or doesn't remember anything about any of the other melachot on Shabbat. And now the Gemara gets to the Mishnah, which you would have thought might come at the beginning of the Masechta, which is many times in Shas we have this issue, which is information or key elements are found in the middle of the Masechta. But that's again because the Masechta or the Gemara assumes that you know all of Mishnayot already when you come to deal with the Masechta. And even though maybe even in Mishnayot you would have expected this Mishnah to begin the beginning of Shabbat, nevertheless here it's located in the middle of the Masechta here in the seventh parak, which is Avot Melachot Arbaim Chaser Achat. There are 39 melachot that are asurot on Shabbat. It's 40 minus 1. Why the Mishnah formulates it that way? There are some that want to suggest that there really are 40 violations here, but you're only going to be chayav 39, because some of the melachot here involve dual or multiple aspects to them that really have more violations, but since it's subsumed under that av, there's only 39, even though you could have read 40. Others say that it's parallel to the way that Torah expresses the 39 Malkot, that the Malkot there are expressed as 40, even though it's really 39. So similarly over here, the Mishnah uses that similar language, express 39 as 40 minus 1, rather than just 39. Now the Mishnah breaks down the Malachot into sections of a process, and each of those sections, those processes, tell us what the Malachot are. We're going to learn again in today's daf, and we've learned before what the source of the 39 melachot is because of the juxtaposition to the Mishkan and from the gematriot or the limudim from the word melacha or elah advarim, and the combination of those two things, as the Baal Tosafot noted for us, teach us which items are considered to be the avot melachot, and we'll discuss in the Gemara maybe what the nafkamina is as to whether something is an av melacha or a tolada. So avot melachot arbaim chaser achat. Here we begin what's called sidura de pat. This is making bread. Hazoreya, someone who plants. Vachoresh, someone who plows. Vakutzer, someone who harvests. Vamamer, someone who piles up the items that they harvest. Vadash, they thresh that which they have harvested, meaning that they crush it or put weight on it. There were different methods for doing that. And by doing so, it causes the shaft of the grain to break away from where the kernels are. Vazoreya, which is to winnow, which is then you throw it up in the air. And the wind carries away the lighter material, the chaff, and leaves behind the kernels that you want. Haborer, then afterwards you separate out by picking out the kernels from that which is the debris and that which you want to discard. Hatochein, then you mill the item. Hamirakeid is that now you sift it in a sifter to separate away, whether it's the fine flour that comes through and the other stuff that sticks inside the sifter or vice versa, where you have the thicker items that you want to keep and the debris or the dregs that fall through the sifter. Halash is to knead. Va'ofeh, baking. So these are the first 11 melachot. That's called sidur of the pot. It's making of the bread. Even though, as Rashi points out, there was no bread that was ever made in the Mishkan. This brings us to a machloket, which we've discussed previously, which is, are the melachot of the Mishkan solely to do with the building of the Mishkan? Or does it have to do with the ongoing operations of the Mishkan? So the Egle Tal brings in the Melacha of Ofeh. He discusses this issue. He brings from the Geonim. And there is a Rabbeinu Hanano that we'll see it maybe at the end of today's daf on Ayin Dalet that seemed to note that even the Melachot that were in the operations of the Mishkan were considered in terms of Melachot of Shabbat and not just the building of the Mishkan. If that's the case, then Ofeh and Sidura de Pat makes sense because of the Lechem Apanim. On the other hand, if you're talking about the making of the Mishkan or the building of the Mishkan, then there was no Ofeh in that process. There was Bishul, as Rashi describes over here, in making the dyes for the dyeing of the Yiriyot. And therefore, there was a process that would have been similar to this. The Mishnah just chose to use Sidura de Pat, which the Bavli will later on ask, why did the Mishnah leave Mevashel, which would have seemed to be the more basic item, and then choose to use Ofeh instead. That does bring to a machloket as to whether Ofeh is an av milacha. Is it on the same level as Mevashel, and they're just synonymous? Mevashel is type of cooking, and Ofeh is a type of baking. They both accomplish the same thing, just through different methods of using of heat in order to do it, and therefore they are, in a sense, synonymous, just different manifestations of the same melacha, and they're both avot melachot. or as Ofeh is baking a subsidiary, a toledah of the Av Melacha. In truth, it really doesn't make a difference, because if you violated both of them, you'd only be one chayav, one chatat, whether it's a toledah and Av, or they're both the same Av. You'll only be chayav once, bishogeg, for that violation. It might have an afkamina, again, we'll see later on today's daf, for toledot of toledot, whether you can have derivatives of derivatives. If Ofeh is a derivative, then something that's a derivative of Ofeh would then be a second derivative, and that's a question we will deal with later today's daf, as to whether that is still classified as something that's a sur bishabbat, midoraito. So there might be some nafkamina as to whether Ofeh is classified as an av, or whether simply Ofeh is here because of sidura de pat, but not because it's really an av melacha, which seems to be the view of Rashi, as opposed to the view of the Rabbeinu Hananel and some of the Gaonim, who think that maybe Ofeh is an av melacha. In addition, Ofeh is unusual as long as well with Zoreya, the first and last of the Sidura de Pat, which is that they are process-oriented. They're not something that happens in a moment in time. They're something that takes time to be processed. And we discussed this back on Daf Dalid, the beginning of the Masechta. What is the din with regards to process-oriented melachot? For instance, baking. If someone takes out the bread before it's fully baked, then they could save the person from violating the Isur of Shabbat. Given that, you see that when you interrupt a melacha by process, that stops the melacha or stops the violation of the melacha. The question is, if that's true by Ofeh, is that also true by Zoreya? And over there we discussed the machloket between the Rashash and the Eglei Tal as to whether Zoreya has the same din as Ofeh. If you were to stop it, does that also stop the violation? For instance, one planted on Shabbat, that planting will not take effect for at least 3 days. And therefore, if you pulled it out sometime on Sunday or Monday, does that prevent the Isur? Or is it only because something was stopped on Shabbat itself that it stops the Isur? But after Shabbat, it's not. Rashash, who says that Zriah is completed after Shabbat, and therefore you could possibly interrupt it. Same vein, so too, if something is baked right before the end of Shabbat, and if the baking is finished after Shabbat, you would be chayav, because you see that a malacha that is completed after Shabbat is considered to be a malacha. On the other hand, the Minchat Chinuch in Mitzvah Reish Tzadichet disagrees and says that Zoreya is fundamentally different than that, because Zoreya, you're chayav just for planting, even though it never takes root, because anything that happens on Chol is not relevant to Shabbat. And therefore, the Minchat Chinuch and the Eglei Tal brings a similar view, that if you interrupt the Zoreya later on, that will not change the fact that the person is chayav for Zoreya. So these two melachot, process-oriented, have this machloket associated with them as to whether, if that process is completed after Shabbat, are you chayav? And if you interrupt that process after Shabbat, would you be patur? And that's a machloket between the Minchat Chinuch Eglei Tal on one side, who say that you can't have completion of a melacha on Chol, and therefore if you baked late in the day, you'd be patur. If you're Zoreya on Shabbat, and somebody takes it out after Shabbat, you're still chayav for the Etzem Zriah on Shabbat. Whereas the Rashash believes that you are chayav for something on Chol. If somebody took the seeds out after Shabbat, you would be patur from Zriah. And if you baked on Shabbat and continued into Chol, you'd be chayav for it if it completed the process even during Chol. So now the Mishnah moves on to the next series of melachot, which are the wool that was used in the making of the Yiriyot HaMishkan. That is a gozezet tzemer, someone who shears the wool from the animal. Hamelabno, someone who bleaches it or washes it. Vamenapatso, someone who combs it or hackles it. The truth is that amongst the Rishonim, there are different opinions as to exactly what Menapso is. The Rambam believes it means to beat it with sticks in order to separate out the fibers. Rashi says it's to actually separate the fibers from each other. And there is the view of the Meiri, which is that it's combing of the wool to separate the fibers. Batsovo, someone who dyes it. Bataveh, someone who spins it into a thread. Vehamesach, sets up the strings or stretches the strings onto the loom. Veha oseh shnei batei nirin, someone who makes two eyes of the heddle. There is a harness called a nir, and that harness has strings that are strung from top to bottom on that harness. In the middle of those strings that are strung from top to bottom, there's a little eye hole. Those eye holes have the strings of the loom, the warp, go through them. Those two harnesses then move up and down to shift the strings of the warp up and down so you can throw the shuttle through them, and it creates the weave by sending it straight through. So you make shnei batei nirim. If you make two of those eyes of the heddle, then you are also chayav on Shabbat, because that is part of the process or the setting up of the loom in order to weave those items. So if you set up such a structure, if you put two of the strings through those batei nirim to set it up so they can alternate up and down in order to do the weaving, that's also a problem on Shabbat. As derivatives of that, Rashi and Rabbeinu Kanano on tomorrow's daf say, Rashi will say it's the setting up of the warp, the weave that you're doing with reeds, for instance, that allows you to go in and out and weave the woof or the horizontal reeds through the vertical reeds. Or according to the Rabbeinu Kanano, there is if you put the horizontal reeds in and weave them in, that creates an up and down for the weave. If you've done two of them, that starts the weave pattern, and that's the equivalent of oseh shnei batei nirin. Boreg shnei chutim, someone who weaves two strings. Ba'poseh shnei chutim, someone who snaps or breaks two chutim. Rashi says it's a case maybe where you have strings that are too long and then you break them to shorten them up. Others say it's a case where the strings are snapped and you need to rip them in order, or break them in order to tie them together afterwards. And akosher v'hamatir, someone who ties a knot, or someone who undoes a knot. Once again here, that has to do with the weaving process. If a string snaps, do you need to then rip it in order to allow you to connect it to another string? Or if it's too long, do you rip it in order then to connect it to another string? V'atofer shtei tefirot, or someone who stitches two stitches. V'akorei almanat litfor shtei tefirot, or someone who rips in order to create two stitches. And as Rashi notes over here, that's the only usage of ripping in the Mishkan, which is that if you have a hole or you have something that's not big enough to stitch up, or it's not going to stitch properly because of the way the hole is torn, you need to tear it more, that's what it's korei almanat litfor. That's the type of korea that you are chayav for. But if it was not done ripping for tefirah, they don't have such avudah in the Mishkan, and that's not chayav on Shabbat. As Rashi notes over here, all of these malachot have to do with the avudat ha-yiriyot, making the yiriyot in the Mishkan. So now we move on to the hides, which were used as part of the kisui of the ohel of the Mishkan. That is the orot techashim that were used for that purpose. And so that now is atzad tzvi, someone who captures and traps an animal. Ashochato, someone who shechs it. Amafshito, someone who flays it. Amocho, someone who salts that which was flayed. Abate it, oro, someone who tans the hide. Vamimechako, someone who smooths it out by shaving off the hair or taking off the uneven parts. Vamachatko, you slice it into strips or pieces that you need. Akotev, shteotiot, someone who writes two letters. Vamochek, amanat lechtov shteotiot, or someone who erases in order to write two letters. We'll see later on in the Gemara that has to do with the krashei ha-mishkan, the krashim, the boards that made up the Mishkan, and pairing them up properly. And habuneh vasoter, someone who builds, someone who destroys on Shabbat is chayav. Hamechabeh, someone who extinguishes, v'amavir, and someone who ignites. Question as to why mechabeh comes before mavir is noted by many. The Miri suggests that it's just the order of the way it was done in the Mishkan, which is that they first burnt things and extinguished them to make coals, in order then to be mavir, to heat up the items that they needed heating up. Others suggest that mavir is put later because mavir is subject to a machloket as to whether mavir is the lav yatzat, lechalek yatzat, and therefore, since it's more controversial, it was put second after mechabeh, which nobody disagrees about. And some suggest that the only kibui that you're chayav for is kibui al menat lahavir, and therefore it was put before the havara. So those are different reasons for that order. And then the final two malachot are amakeb and patish. That is the final stage, as Rashi says, in any malacha, the gemar malacha, the final thing that makes it functional or finishes off whatever you were doing. That's called makeb patish. And as Rashi describes over here, the uman, the craftsman, when he wants to use the hammer, he smashes things down. He smashes the hammer first on the anvil in order to make sure that it's absolutely flat in order to finish off the work, whether that's the final thing he does or that's the final thing he does before he hits the item for the last time in order to make sure it's absolutely smooth. And therefore, that's called the Gemar Malachav Makeh Patish. And the last one, which we've discussed from in the beginning of the Masechta until now, which is a Motzim Rishut the Rishut, one who carries from one Rishut to the other Rishut, which is the Av. And then all other carrying will be subsidiaries of carrying from one Rishut to the other Rishut. Because as the Ran notes, person who is Mavir Da'at Al-Mot Bishut Rabim, the Dalet Amot are considered to be the reshut of an individual, and therefore when he's Mavir Dalet Amot, it's really a subsidiary or derivative of Mavir Mishut the reshut, because he's leaving his personal space and moving over to a new personal space, and that's why Mavir Dalet Amot Mishut Rabim is a derivative or Tolada of a Motzi Mishut the Shut. Re'elu Avot Melachot Abayim Chaser Achat. These are the 40 minus 1 Melachot of the 39 Melachot of Shabbat. The Tosfot over here raises a question, which is a machloket harishunim, as to whether when it comes to matir and kosher, when one unties and ties, is the only time you're chayev for untying when you do matir, almanat likshor, with the intent of tying. And that is because the melachot of Shabbat need to be constructive in their nature. You're not chayev for what's called mikalkel, for ruining things on Shabbat. So the question is matir standalone, can it be a constructive action? Or is it only when you're matir, almanat likshor, where it changes it from a destructive to constructive item, that would be a case when you are chayav. So Tosfot says, well, maybe because it doesn't write matir, almanat likshor, like it does by mochek, almanat likhtov, there the Mishnah makes it clear that there's a correlation between the mechika and the ktiva. Or, whereby the case of Koreya, Amanat Litfor. There the Mishnah explicitly expresses it. So the fact that it doesn't express it here, maybe that should be evidence of the fact that you don't need to have it be a constructive item. The problem with that logic is that we already established back in Bamei Madlikim and Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Bet that Soter, destructive or breaking something, is only a Malachan Shabbat if it's Amanat Livnot, if it's done with the purpose of rebuilding or facilitating rebuilding. And therefore you see that there are examples in the Mishnah where you have Soter and Boneh, where the Mishnah doesn't explicitly say that it's Soter Amanat Livnot, even though that is a requirement. And similarly, for those that believe that Kibui is only Kibui Amanat Avir, that's also not mentioned in the Mishnah. So just the fact that it's not mentioned in the Mishnah is not evidence of the fact that that's not the case. Although, as the Bayit Tosfot will point out, Rashi seems to indicate that you can have matir, that's a constructive melacha, even without the manat likshor, later on in Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Bet. And there Rashi seems to indicate that matir is independently chayav, whereas the Rabbeinu Chananel seems to believe that you need matir amanat likshor in order to be chayav. And so it is a machloki between them with regard to this issue. And Tosfot says that it seems that the Yushalmi leans more favorably towards the view of the Rabbeinu Chananel that you need matir amanat likshor. And even though it should have been mentioned in the Mishnah, Tosfot back on Lamed Aleph from Bet explained already why soter amanat livnot and matir amanat likshor were not explicitly mentioned in the Mishnah like Koreya and Mochek. That's because in each of those cases, you needed a shiur. Whereas by Boneh and Soter, even a koshu is chayav. And similarly with kosher and matir, even the untying or tying of one knot is sufficient to make you chayav. Now then by a kotev, which is shteyotiyot, and mochek amanat lichtov shteyotiyot. Or by the case of koreya, amanat litfor shtey tfirot. So since each of those had a shiur that was associated with them, that's why the Mishnah explicitly gave you the positive formulation of what has to come afterwards. So even though there are other examples in the Mishnah, they weren't mentioned explicitly because they don't have shiurim associated with them. That's how Tosafot differentiates between the cases where the Mishnah does and does not mention this correlation between destructive melachot and constructive melachot, even though there are more than that are explicitly mentioned in our Mishnah. And for that reason, he thinks that, like the Rabbeinu Chananel, it's matir amanat likshor, and not simply matir that you are chayav for on Shabbat. There is a sheet of Rabbi Yochanan in the Yushalmi that uses makev patish to describe the completion of any process or the finalization of anything that you do. Rav Asher Weiss is fond of quoting that for his shita with regards to electricity, where he, against most of the poskim, believes that turning something on or using electricity on Shabbat is an isur doraita, not an isur derabanan, and it's because of makev patish, because if you're completing a circuit, you're completing something that then makes it functional, and that, according to Rabbi Yochanan and Yerushalmi, is called makev patish. And based on that, he thinks that electricity or anything associated with electricity, even though they're not lighting incandescent bulbs is havara. So there, most poskim believe that it's doraita because of the havara, because of the filament that lights up. But other types of lights, like LEDs and fluorescence, maybe there's an issue of bishul, of heating up the gases that are there, but most believe that it's only the Rabbanan, and certainly by LEDs, Most of them believe that it's only an issue Rabbanan, whereas Rav Asher Weiss believes that those are all violations d'oraita because of the problem of Makeh v'Patish. So here the Gemara asks the question and brings down Rav Yochanan, who we've seen throughout the Masechta already 3-4 times, which is Minyan Alomali. Why does the Mishnah enumerate Avot Melachot 39 when you could just list the Melachot? We could count them ourselves and know that there are 39. So why does it summarize and say that there are Arba'im Chaser Achat? What's the purpose of doing that? Some Rav Yochanan Shimasan Kulam Elam Achat Chayav Kol Achat V'Achat. To teach you that if you do all of them in one forgetting, then you're going to be Chayav for 39 Chataot. That's the maximum number of Chataot that you're going to be Chayav for a violation of Shabbat. And that's the case of Zadon Shabbat, V'Shigigat Melachot, which we discussed numerous times previously in this parak. Hazorea Ve'achoresh. It's very strange that the Mishnah notes that planting before plowing. So Michtei, Michrav Kar Ve'Bereisha. Normally you plow first, and then Litnei Choresh, Vadar Litnei Zorea. Then why don't you stay plowing before planting? That would make more sense. So Tana Be'Eretz Yisrael Koi. The Mishnayot are authored or found in Eretz Yisrael. Dezari Bereisha V'Hadar Karve. That they first seed, and then they plow again. And as Rashi notes over here, it's because the land or the earth in Israel is much harder. In Bavel, the land was very soft. So you plowed it, and then you could seed right into those furrows that you had plowed. In Eretz Yisrael, they plowed twice. They actually plowed once at the end of the harvest, and then they plowed again here by the Zriah. But the earth was hard so that it was hard to bury the seeds in the ground. So after they seeded, they would actually have to plow over the seeds in order to bury the seeds into the ground. And for that reason, it mentions that Choresh after Zriah is also a problem of Melacha. Of course, certainly the Charisha before, the plowing before the seeding is problematic, but it's coming to tell you that even Charisha after the Zriah, anything that softens the earth, facilitates the ability of the item to grow by softening up the ground or changing the dynamic of the ground, that's considered to be a Melacha of Choresh. And that's why it mentions Choresh after Zoreya. Tana. Hazoreya vazomer vanoteya vamavrich vamarkiv kulam melacha achat hein. All of these are considered to be one melacha. Zoreya is planting, zomer is pruning, noteya is planting a sapling in the ground. Hamavrich is when you take a existing branch and you reinsert it into the ground, trying to root it as a attached to a main trunk. Vamarkiv is grafting one tree onto another tree. All of them are the same melacha. Mar says, Ma'kamash Malan. What are you telling us that these are all the same thing? Ha'kamash Malan. Asem melachot arbe. Mei melacha achat. Someone who does multiple melachot that are from the same melacha, enu chayav elachat. You only chayav once. Meaning that if you are doing things that are the exact same thing, they're all the same av, or they're all toledot of that av, in that instance, you're only chayav once because it's the violation of the same lav or problematic behavior. And you're not going to be chayav for each one of them individually if they're all done behelam echad and one forgetting. Amar Rav Acha, Amar Rav Chiya Ba'ashi, Amar Rav Ami. Zomer chayav mishum noteya. Pruning is a problem of noteya. Noteya is to plant a sapling. Zomer pruning is something that promotes growth. That's similar to noteya, something where you plant a sapling that's also promoting growth. Vanoteya, and planting a sapling. Vamavrich, and putting a branch into the ground. Vamarkiv, and grafting. Chayav mishum zoreya. They're all chayav mishum zoreya. Gemara says, mishum zoreya in mishum noteya lo. They're chayav for seeding, and they're not chayav for planting a sapling. So Gemara says, ema af mishum zoreya. They're also chayav for zoreya. Over here, there's a machloket Rashi and the Rabbeinu Chananel about how to read this Gemara. And based on that, there's a major machloket that derives from this. And that is, Rashi over here says that Zoreya av melacha. Zoreya seeding is the av melacha. That's what's mentioned in our Mishnah. And he says, Noteya nami av melacha. He says, planting a sapling in the ground or a tree in the ground is also a melacha. And they are synonymous. Just one is Haino Zoreya, which is done with seeds, as opposed to Noteya, which is done by trees. So it's just the same melacha, which is putting something into the ground that will then take root and grow. So one is done through a seed, one's done through a sapling, but both of them are the same, they're just with different objects. And therefore they're the same melacha. Zoreya and Noteya are two sides of the same coin. Then Rashi adds, Vein Mavrich u'Markiv. And Mavrich and Markiv, grafting and putting a branch into the ground, are also av melacha. They're just different methods of getting rooting or the growth of an item. So whether you plant in the ground or you plant it by grafting onto another tree. whether you plant by seeding or putting a sapling, or whether you put a branch into the ground to have it root, all of those are the same melacha, and they're all avot melachot. They all have the same status of being an av melacha. Aval zomer, pruning, is the only exception, which is it is a tolada. It's a subsidiary or derivative of noteya. Zomer promotes growth, just like noteya promotes growth, and therefore zomer is considered to be a tolada, a derivative of noteya. So in the list here, Rashi claims that four of the items are avot, and only the zomer is a tolada. And therefore, the Gemara is asking that your chai mishum zoreya, seeding, and not noteya, all these items are much more similar to noteya than zoreya. And the Gemara answer is af mishum zoreya. Noteya is just a different way of saying zoreya. Zoreya is by seeds, and noteya is by trees. And that's what the answer of the Gemara is. There are a number of issues with Rashi's explanation, the first of which is, if we just said there are 39 melachot, and those are the 39 avot of Shabbat, according to Rashi, we just expanded the list, and all of a sudden there are all these other avot. So the Magid Mishnah in Hilchot Shabbat of the Rambam in Perek Zayin Halacha Bet says that anything that's so similar to the av, that it has almost the exact same properties of the av, they're all subsumed under one category, and it's not that these are really independent avot, they're really the same av. And that seems to be what Rashi is saying over here. Anything that is similar, but not exactly the same, that's called a tolada. But then there are only 39 avot. But the Baalei HaTosafot and the Rabbeinu Chananel deal with what is the nafkamina as to whether something is an av, or something is a subsidiary derivative of another melacha. Tosafot over here deals with it from the perspective of hatra'ah. When you warn an individual that they are doing something wrong on Shabbat, what are you warning them about? So Tosafot points out that you can either warn them for the action they're doing, the toledah itself, or you can warn them for the av of that toledah. But that means you have to get the right av, you have to get the right primary melacha that they're chayav for in order to give them hatra'ah. And that's what the Gemara is asking over here. Well, if you warn him because of zriah, is he going to be chayav? But if you warn him because of noteya, he's not going to be chayav? The Gemara's answer is no, noteya and zriah are synonymous. And therefore, if he warns them because of noteya, or because of zriah, or for any one of these other items here, he will be chayav on Shabbat, because that's considered to be a proper hatra'ah. So Tosafot connects the issue to toledah and av, not that you always have to tell the av of the toledah, but that is another option of hatra'ah that's available. Rabbeinu Chananel, on the other hand, deals with this differently, and the Rabbeinu Chananel says here, Shma'ina mina, midumukim mavrich umarkiv mishum noteya, V'af mishum zoreya. Markiv, which is grafting, and mavrich, which is putting a branch into the ground to root. The Gemara says they are derivatives of both noteya and zoreya. D'yesh toleda letoleda. From here you see that there are derivatives of derivatives, because noteya is a vlad of zoreya. So you see now how the Rabbeinu Chananel read this Gemara. He says that when the Gemara says that noteya is the derivative of zoreya, what it's saying is that noteya is a vlad, a toleda, of the av melacha of zoreya. And then when we say markiv and mavrich are derivatives of zoreya, and the Gemara says, are they derivatives of zoreya, not derivatives of noteya? The Gemara says, yeah, they really are derivatives of noteya. So what does that mean? Well, they are derivatives of noteya, and noteya is a derivative of zriah. And it means that there's double derivative or second derivatives of melachot. Rashi believes that there is no such concept as a tolada letolada. There's an av and a tolada, and that's it. And that's why Rashi terms many of these items as avot, and then only, like zomer, as a tolada, because he doesn't have double derivatives. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel, which reads much easier into the Gemara, says that noteya is a derivative of zoreya, and then all these other items are derivatives of noteya. And that shows you that there's a concept of a tolada letolada. And that's how the Rabbeinu Chananel reads the Gemara. And then when the Gemara finalizes and says, aren't these items of Mavrich and Markiv, how could they just be derivatives of Zoreya? Aren't they more similar to Noteya? To which the Gemara answers, yes, they are also Chayav Mishum Zoreya, which means they are derivatives of Noteya, which is the derivative of Zoreya, and therefore they are also derivatives of Zoreya. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Kana, Zomer V'tzarich Leitzim Chayav Shtaim. Someone who prunes a grapevine, and he needs the wood for firewood. So he's doing two things here. He's doing kotzer, which is harvesting, cutting something off for the item itself that you need that you're cutting off. And that cutting is pruning, which is also promoting growth. Then you're chayav for two things. Achat mishum kotzer, one for harvesting, or for taking, cutting something that is mechubar for for your utilization, and one because of planting, which is the promotion of growth. So in a single action, one can be chayav for two items. And we'll bring other examples of that now, which is Amar Rabbi Yosef, someone who cuts fodder, grass, hay, in order to give it to feed for the animals, it grows back afterwards. So chayav shtayim, achat mishum kotzer, one for harvesting, achat mishum noteya, and the other one for promoting growth, because it's a pruning that will cause the thing to grow back again. Amar Abaye, haiman dekonim silka, someone who cuts. Here, silka in the Gemara is many times translated as beets. Over here, it's harder to understand that because beets are a root vegetable. So it'd more likely be that it's spinach over here. And if you cut back the spinach leaves in order to take those leaves, chayav shtayim, achat mishum kotzer, for cutting the leaves, achat mishum zoreya, or noteya, somebody who is then causing, promoting growth that will regrow afterwards, whether it's beets or more likely, it sounds like here, it might be spinach. These are items whereby the cutting process nets you something that you want to use, which is kotzer, but also promotes further growth, and therefore it's also a problem of noteya, zoreya in that action, and therefore you're chayav shtayim for that action. Over here, Tosfot says, it's only considered pruning if it's beneficial to the tree. If it's detrimental to whatever item that you're cutting it from, then you'd only be chayav kotzer, and not zomer, not pruning or noteya. In addition to that, it sounds like this from the Gemara, that the only way that you're chayav for cutting something that is mechubar is when you're tzarich the eitzim. That it's not called kotzer, ela in you need the eitzim. Mida the hava, and he says this is similar to koreya amanat litfor. Someone who rips in order to stitch, mocheik amanat lichtov, someone who erases in order to write. Tosfot says that's the same thing with kotzer. Kotzer can only be classified as kotzer when it's a productive cutting of the item, which means that you're cutting it because you need or you want that item. It's a constructive act, the kotzer. But if the kotzer is a destructive act, that you're cutting something or ripping something in order to be a destructive act, that you're not going to be chayav for because you need a positive or constructive outcome of the item in order for you to be chayav. Otherwise, they become what's called a melacha she'en tzricha gufa. It's a melacha that you're doing, but you don't need the intended outcome of such a melacha, which is the constructive side of that melacha. Over here, the Reb Kiva Eger points out, muvar de svirle, it sounds like this from the Tosfot, the av hecha de eno mikalkel, even if it's not a destructive act, the tzarich leiz a davar, because you need it for some purpose, mikomakom patur, you'll still be patur, unless you need the etzim themselves. And therefore, even if it's not a destructive act, but it's a constructive act, you would not be chayav. Elaim kain, you need the item that you're cutting off. Or, in the case of koreya, when you rip it, only amanat litfor. Even if the koreya was done in a constructive manner, it sounds like Tosfot, that's not enough. You have to do it in a manner that also has this particular positive aspect associated with that. And Rabbi Kiva Eger points out that later on in the Gemara, Adav Kufay Amudbet, where the Gemara says if he's Korea Almeto, or Korea Bechamato, someone who rips because of a death in the family, or rips because of his anger and assuages his anger, that type of ripping is what's called a ripping in the heat of the moment. And that type of ripping that involves emotion is an expression of that emotion and is cathartic in its action. And there the Gemara says you're chayav for that because that type of koreya is a constructive action. And you see there that even though it's a melacha of destructive force, it's a mekalkel, nevertheless you're chayav, even though there's no toelet, meaning like this toelet of the Mishkan that is in there. And so here Tosafot makes it sound like the melacha over here is defined by the positive action that was done in the Mishkan. Similar to what we saw in Rashi before, that certain shiurim make it that the melacha doesn't exist without the shiur. Absent that shiur, it's a chatzi melacha. Similar over here, Tosfot seems to think that amanat litfor, or kotzer v'tzarich le'etzim, or mocheik amanat lichtov, are definitions of the melacha. And absent those necessities, it's not called a melacha. And that's even if it's a constructive act, it's not considered a melacha. Elim kain, you do it for the purpose that was done in the Mishkan. Since these are destructive forces, they only have din of melacha when they're done for those items that are done in the Mishkan. And that's what Tosfot seems to express over here. And that's what Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Gemara Shas is challenging, which is, that's just not true. The Gemara later on says, HaKoreya B'chamato Al-Meito is Chayav, even though it's Kilkol, and it's not Al-Menat Litfor. But in order to solve this, the Ber Alocha and Siman Shin Mem, and the Ramat Lo Nitkave mentions the fact that he thinks that Tosfot just brought it down, B'Shigra D'Lishnei, meaning that he just brought it down in the normal way to say a positive structure, I didn't mean to say it in an exclusive manner, that that's the only way it can happen. It just means something constructive, not something that has to be korea al-manat before, but rather korea that is a constructive action, and any constructive action would be chayav. So now the Gemara continues, v'achoresh, tano achoresh v'achofer v'achoreitz, someone who plows, someone who digs, or someone who creates a ditch by pulling something heavy along the way. Kulay malacha achatein. Again, these are all one malacha. Rav Sheshet, haitalo gav shushit, if he has a small mound, benatla, and he removes or flattens out that mound. If it's bebayit, if it's in his house, chayav mishum boneh. He's improving the house, he's making the house now more usable, improving the utility of the house, that's a problem of binyan. Bitsadeh, if he does that in his field, chayav mishum choresh. That is considered to be plowing because he's accomplishing the same thing that plowing does, which is it facilitates planting. That's either by loosening up the earth, which he's doing here by removing the mound, or by flattening out the surface so now that it is able to be used for seeding. So it's a preparation or a prep for seeding. Amarova aitalo guma, if he has a ditch, vitamama, and he filled it up with earth. Babayit chayav, mishom boneh. If he does that in the house, that's boneh, because now he's filled in a depression in the house, it makes it flat, so that's improving the utility of the house, and it's boneh. But sadeh, if he does that in the field, he's chayav mishum choresh. Again, either because he's filling in with loose dirt, and that's what choresh does, or because, again, he's flattening the surface, which facilitates planting, and that's what choresh does as well. Amrei Abi Ava, chofer guma b'shabbat, someone who digs a ditch on Shabbat, ve'enu tzarich el le'afra. But he's not digging the ditch because he needs the ditch, he's digging the ditch because he needs the earth that's inside the ditch. Patur, aleha, you're patur from it because it's called a malacha, shein tzricha de gufa. The main purpose of digging or boneh or choresh is to prepare the field, to build whatever it is there. That means that the digging itself has utility inherently in the ditch that you are making. Over here, you don't care about the ditch, you just care about getting the earth out of the ditch that you need for some other purpose. That's what's called a malacha. You're doing the malacha of digging, probably getting choresh or boneh, but you're not doing it for the purpose of choresh or boneh, you're doing it for the item that's there, the earth that's there. So that's a malacha that you're doing, but ain't sucha de gufa, it's not the purpose or intent that it was done for in the Mishkan. And therefore you are patur aleha, according to Rabbi Shimon, who believes malacha shein sucha de gufa is patur of alasur. Now the Gemara adds, according to Rabbi Abba, v'afilu Rabbi Yehuda. Even Rabbi Yehuda normally says, malacha amar malacha shein sucha de gufa chayav, hani mile mitakein. That's only when you do something that's constructive. Hai mikalkelhu, but over here you're doing something that is destructive, and that is a machloket later on in the Masechta between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether destructive actions are considered to be chayav on Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda believes that mikalkel is patur on Shabbat, whereas Rabbi Shimon, with a few exceptions, believes that mikalkel is chayav on Shabbat. And so here, in a case of malacha shein tzricha de gufa, where it's kilkul, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that you are patur of alasur, and not chayav over here, even though he normally believes that malacha shein tzricha de gufa, you are chayav for. V'akutzer, someone who harvests, tana kutzer, habutzer, v'aguder, v'mesik, v'ora. All of these items are forms of harvesting. It depends what you're harvesting. Kotzer is by grains or cereals. Those are called kotzer. Habutzer is someone who picks grapes. Haguder is someone who picks dates. Hemisik is picking olives. Vaura is picking figs. So therefore, all kulam malacha achat, they're all the same malacha of harvesting, picking something from that is mechubar for the item itself. They're just different verbs to describe an action on different objects, but they're the same action, just on a different object. Amar Rav Papa, iman deshoda pisa ledikla. Someone takes a clod of earth and throws it at the dates on the date tree. Va'atar tamre, and that causes the dates to loosen and fall away. Chayav shtayim, you're chayav for two violations. Achad mishum tolesh, one is picking, because you're taking something that's mechubar and now separating it out. So that'd be tolesh, or a derivative of kotzer, or over here, the way that we called it before, is goder. V'chat mishum mifareik. And one because of mifareik. Mifareik is to break something apart, to take a shell and break it away from the seed when you want the seed. So that's called mifareik. That's a toladav dash of threshing, where you crush something or you work something so that they separate away from each other. Rashi brings two possibilities as to what's mifareik over here. One is that mifareik chamor, which means to unload. And that's why it's called mifreik over here. You're unloading the tree from its dates. That's one possibility. The other possibility breaks is that it's mifreik tamarim in a machbodot. that he's breaking the date away from the bunch or the cluster of dates that are there. And therefore separating the date away from the cluster, breaking up the cluster, is what makes it into a issue of Mifareik. The Baal Tosafot, the Ri, does not like Rashi's explanation, but rather favors the view of the Rashbam, that the Mifareik over here is that the dates actually have some sort of shell or covering around them, and then when you hit them, that shell or covering that surrounds them breaks away, and that's why it's called Mifareik, which is then much more similar to what Mifareik is, a derivative of Dash, of threshing, which is where you break away the stalks or the shafts of the grain from the grain itself or the head of the grain. And that's what dash is. And a mefarek is a toled av dash. And Rashi makes that clear here that it's a toled av dash. To that, the Baal Tosafot brings the view of the Rabbeinu Tam that he thinks that that's not correct because the Gemara later on says that milking a cow is a derivative of dash or mefarek. But the problem with that, as the Rabbeinu Tam notes, is that Dash only applies to gedulei karka, and cows are not gedulei karka, so how can mifareik be a reference to a melacha for milking a cow? And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests the alternative that milking a cow is not a derivative of dash, rather a derivative of mimacheik, which is to smooth something out. And that is because when you squeeze the milk out of the udder, you are pulling on the teats and smoothing out the teats. That's why it's mifareik is a derivative of mimacheik. The Ri rejects that because of the Gemara later on in Kuf Mem Dalet Amud Bet, which is that if a person milks directly into a ketera, into solid items, that's not a problem with mifareik. Whereas if he milks into a kara, into a bowl, that is mifareik. Because in one case, he's creating a liquid from a solid item. He's separating away food from the udder. Whereas in the other case, if he takes it from the cow directly into the ketera, into the solid food item that's there, it's going from ochel to ochel, and it's not called mifareik. That's clearly not an issue of mimacheik, because that's not a distinction that matters within the world of mimacheik. Therefore, he agrees with Rashi that mifareik is a tolada of dash. And he just says that it seems that Rashi favors the position of Rabbi Yehuda later on, who argues on the Rabbonon, who say that disha is only by gdulei karkos, that's what was done in the Mishkan with the Smamanim, and Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that, and Tosafot brings evidence of the fact that Rashi seems to favor that position of Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why the problem of Cholev is a problem of Mifareik, even though it's not Gedulei Karka. And that also will be the explanation of Mifareik in our case over here, that it's a Toleda of Dash. Rashi Amar, Ein Derech Plisha Bekach, Ein Derech Prika Bekach. Yes, you did Plisha. Yes, you did Prika there, but these aren't the normal way to pick things. It's not the normal way to do Priruk, Dash, Mifareik. And therefore, it's considered to be La'achar Yad. And La'achar Yad is a Isur D'Rabbanan, but it's not an Isur D'Oraita. Ve'ama Amer, someone who piles something up. Amarova, I'm on the konif milcha mimilchata, someone who piles up salt from the salt factories. They used to take seawater and then put them into open pits and let the water evaporate, and then the remainder would be the salt. So the milchata that's found in that salt, if you pile that up into a pile, chay mishum mamer, you're chayav for piling it up. Vayamar, anymore el gdulei karka. Vay says, imor is only relevant by gdulei karka. That's the way it was done in the Mishkan. That's the way it's done in the process of Sidura the Prat, like we see in the Mishnah. And therefore, it's not relevant to salt, which is not Gedulei Karka. Vadash, threshing. Tana, Hadash. Vaminapates, Vaminapate. Kulam Malacha Achatein. When it comes to Dash, which is the threshing, again, separating the stalks away from the grain by crushing them or pressing them down, there are other Melachot that are done to other items that are very similar to that. And that is that when it comes to Minapates, which Rashi says over here, is stripping the strings of the linen away from the flax, which is done by beating the flax stalks to cause them to separate away the stringy material. Or minapate, Rashi says, is what you do to cotton, to separate away the cotton from the seeds. All of those are the same form of mlacha, which is that through crushing or pressure, you're separating away the item that you want from the parts of the item that you do not want, or you're bringing to the forefront the kernels, the flax strips, and the cotton away from the other items that are considered to be refuse, and that's why they're all considered to be melachachat. They're just performed on these different items. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Ayin Gimel Amud Bet.